You guys, Flickers of Fear time, and we're covering yet another Dario Argento movie today. This is a classic. Probably, I don't think anybody would argue with me on this score, probably one of his best films. Probably not my, I don't think it's my favorite giallo of his. That would probably be Deep Red. And I don't think it's my overall favorite film of his. That would be Suspiria. But this is definitely, I think this is probably my second favorite giallo of his. He made a lot of really good ones. This is Tenebrae. Now, the interesting thing about this, look, I have this Anchor Bay DVD. I can't remember what year this came out. It was probably like early to mid 2000s. And this, I see this on like a lot of, releases of it. And it's actually spelled like that, like without the A. Which I guess is sort of correct also, but actually, if you watch the movie, the title of it is actually Brae, which is, as far as I know, the more correct title. Yeah, so that's Latin for shadows or darkness. Now, here's something that always kind of, like, got me about this. So, as most people that know anything about Italian horror know, Suspiria came out in 1977, and that was the first of his so-called Three Mothers trilogy, you know, kind of supernatural, when he had, you know, previous to that been making mostly like giallo movies, which is kind of what he was known for. So Suspiria came out in 1977 and was like a really big hit. And so then he decided he was going to make the second movie in the Three Mothers trilogy, which was Inferno. And that came out in 1980. But apparently that wasn't a real good experience for him. I think there was a lot of studio meddling and it didn't really come out the way he wanted. We've done a review of it a while back, and it's a good movie, but obviously it's not anything like Suspiria, like not anything as good, anywhere as good as Suspiria. And he was kind of disappointed with it, and it really didn't do very well. It kind of like flopped, you know what I mean? So after that, he was just kind of like, you know what, I'm just going to go back to making giallos. So interestingly, even though the movie that he made that would become Tenebrae, which came out in 1982, at least in Europe, was called Tenebrae, and you could argue that because one of the three mothers from the trilogy was called Mater Tenebrarum, or Mother of Darkness, Mother of Shadows, maybe people thought that it's like, oh, this is the third one, but that's not how it turned out. Actually, he didn't make the third one until, when was it? 2007, I want to say, or, you know, it was like a long time, Mother of Tears, and I didn't love it. I'd have to revisit it because I think I've only seen it once or twice, and that was like a long time ago, and I remember being really disappointed in it, but I'll eventually get around to doing that one as well. So actually, Tenebrae is his return to the giallo film. Now, apparently, he got the idea for this. I guess he'd been staying in LA for a little while, and I guess he was kind of getting sort of like upset by all this sort of like random crime that was going on like in LA during this time period. Also, on a more personal note, apparently, according to him, he sort of had this dude that was like a stalker, like when he was in LA. And apparently this dude had become obsessed with Suspiria, and it was like really emotionally kind of like messing him up. And he started writing to Dario Argento, like he found out where he was living at the time, and he started writing to him and calling him. And Dario said that at first he was kind of like seemed normal, and they were just like talking about the movie and how much the guy had liked the movie and how, you know, how much Suspiria had affected him. But he's like, as time went on, the dude got crazier and crazier, and then basically started sending him death threats because he's like, you made this movie and it fucked my emotions all up, and so I'm gonna get back at you. So that experience went into his writing of Tenebrae. And it's interesting because this movie, I think this is probably, and I'm not the only like person that says this, I think this is probably his most, I don't know if I'd call it straightforward, but I mean, because a lot of his movies and a lot of Italian horror in general is kind of dreamlike, you know what I mean? It doesn't have like a lot of, even some of the giallo movies, which are on their face crime thrillers, have like a lot of surrealist kind of things to it, and like narrative stuff that doesn't make sense. That's kind of one of the hallmarks of the genre. But this one has a couple weird things in it, but this one is actually like pretty narratively straightforward and pretty easy to follow. I will say though, that I don't know if you guys know, but it didn't come out in the United States until 1984, and it came out under a different title. It came out under the title Unsane, Nothing to do with the more recent film of the same name, which I reviewed a while back. And at least 10 minutes had been cut out of it, including all of the violence, because this is a pretty violent movie, even for Dario Argento, and some of the kind of like exposition sort of scenes. So I think when it came out in the US originally as Unsane, people saw it and were like, what the fuck is even happening in this movie? Because it was like incoherent. If you see the uncut version, which is generally the one that's available now, it's easy, it's very straightforward, it's very easy to follow, particularly for a Dario Argento movie. So I just thought that was really funny. Also, I should say too that it was when it was released in Europe, I think they had some problems with it, like a little bit of the very, very famous like last murder scene, which is like super gory. I think some of that was trimmed, like in Italy. I think they had some problems in Germany, like they had to cut some stuff out and everything. But generally, not that much was taken out. But in the UK, Tenebrae became one of the notorious 39 movies that were known as video nasties. So you weren't really allowed to like show it. You weren't really allowed to show it or rent it or anything like that, which is weird because I don't know. It's violent. Yeah. But it's just, I kind of feel like it wasn't, it was almost kind of like lumped into this thing with all the other video nasties that were kind of these schlocky sort of movies, and Tenebrae is not schlocky, not at all. It's actually really, really well thought out. You know, probably, I'm not saying that his other movies aren't, but I'm just saying that it's, and actually Dario Argento has actually talked the most about Tenebrae, I think, and like what he was trying to do with it, like what the thematic thrust of it was. So there's a lot of like stuff going on in this one. It's really, really, he really like put a lot of thought into the look of it. Now, interestingly, even though it's called Tenebrae, which means, like I said, darkness or shadows or whatever, this movie is really, really bright. And it's weird because it's the same cinematographer, I think, that worked on Suspiria, and this is almost kind of like the polar opposite of that as far as like cinematography and like the look of it goes, because what Dario wanted to do, and I don't think this is actually all that apparent when you're watching the movie, but what his thought was as to the look of this movie was that he wanted it to be set, I mean, it's set in Rome, and, you know, it is referred to as Rome. But he said, I wanted it to almost be like an imaginary city or a city that was like 5 years in the future after like some kind of big, you know, cataclysm had wiped out most of the population. So the people that are left are kind of like wealthy. So what he tried to do was that even though he shot almost all of it on location in Rome, was that he didn't want anything that was recognizably like old, like landmarks and stuff like that from Rome that you would normally see, these kind of like Renaissance era buildings and paintings and things like that. He's like, I don't want anything like that. He's like, I want it to look completely modern, and I want it to look like complete, like depopulated. Like there's people in it, but when he films it, it almost looks like there's like these huge piazzas and like all these big, like kind of brutalist architecture buildings, like apartment buildings. Everything is like sleek and white and like ultra modern, and there's not really that many people around. And that was deliberate. Like he wanted that. I'm not really entirely sure why, but that's kind of the look that he wanted for it. So as I said, even though the title of it is literally darkness, he wanted it to look super bright. And almost all of the murders take place in bright, like harsh daylight, either outside, like in the sunlight, or inside in like really, really harsh, bright, you know, interior lighting. So it's like very, very white. And it's like really, it's a really interesting artistic choice, I guess. Because I think that the Tenebrae, the darkness that he was talking about, he wanted to, I think that he, what he was trying to get at was that he was trying to imply that the darkness he was talking about was the darkness like inside of people. So he very deliberately didn't want darkness to be on the outside. Everything is like super bright and there aren't hardly any shadows. I think there's only one murder that takes place at night, but most of it is set during the daytime. So the story that we have concerns an American author named Peter Neal, and he is played by Anthony Franciosa. Now, he is in Rome. He's promoting his latest novel. He's like a crime writer. And he's promoting his latest novel, which is called Tenebrae. And there's little bits and pieces of the novel, like, read throughout the movie. But it's kind of like, all you get from it is that the books are basically crime thrillers. They're very violent. And at some point, one of the women that is, like, one of the journalists that's interviewing him, like, at a press conference or whatever, is kind of, like, yelling at him about how misogynist, like, all of his stuff is. And it's, like, all of these women in it are, you know, they're just victims or ciphers or whatever. And he gets kind of, like, upset about this. And that's kind of another theme in this movie as well. There's a lot of themes of, like, quote-unquote sexual aberrant behavior. There's a lot of themes of doubling, as in, you know, kind of like the light and dark side of people's personality, or almost kind of like every character in this has another double or another counterpart, like, in another character of the movie. And, like, there's a couple shots in that, which, you know, I'll kind of get into a minute, because there's kind of a couple famous shots where that's kind of, like, put forward, you know what I mean? Like, everybody, like, you know, Peter Neal, for instance, who's, like, the main character, his double, sort of, is the detective, like, you know what I mean? Because the way that they sort of interact with one another, they're kind of, like, two sides of the same coin. And Peter Neal almost kind of, like, takes over a detective role as well. So yeah, so he gets to Rome. A weird thing happens. Like, he's flying from New York, and he has, like, his travel bag or whatever, and he kind of leaves it because he has to go get a phone call from his ex-fiancée, Jane, who factors into the plot later on. And he comes back to his bag, and he finds it, but then when he gets to Rome and opens it, like, it's all fucked up. Like, all of his clothes have been, like, torn, and, like, things, like, splashed on them. So you're led to believe that Jane did that probably, but it's kind of, like, left a mystery. So pretty much the minute that he lands in Rome and gets to the hotel that he's going to be living in for the time being, it's him and his assistant, Anne, who's played by Daria Nicolodi, who obviously was in a lot of Dario Argento's movies. They were a couple at the time. Daria Nicolodi also co-wrote Suspiria and several of his other movies as well. Like, she was kind of his, you know, collaborator. So she's in this too. Oh, and fun fact, I actually didn't know this because I just rewatched this again. And I know that that's not Daria Nicolodi's real voice. That's, you know, she's dubbed, obviously, like a lot of the actors in this are. No, although not so many of them, because there are actually a lot of Americans in this one. But yeah, her voice in Tenebrae was dubbed by Teresa Russell, of all people. And I was just kind of like, oh, that's weird. I thought that voice sounded familiar. But yeah, so there's that too. So him and Anne, as soon as they get to the hotel, detectives come, are, like, already in the room, and they're like, okay, well, this girl, who we've seen this scene happen prior, there was a girl who was, like, a shoplifter. She was kind of, like, a chronic shoplifter, so she'd been picked up a lot of times. But I guess she got out of it a lot of times because she was, like, super hot, and she would steal something, and in the scene, she was actually stealing a copy of Tenebrae, like, from a, you know, bookstore or whatever. And she got caught, and then she goes into the office of the manager or whatever and basically, like, hey, if you let me go, it's just a paperback book, you know, and gives him her address, like, implying, hey, let me off of the shoplifting and I'll give you some sexual favors. And he's just like, okay, fair enough. But yeah, so she ends up going back to her apartment and getting killed. Now, when she gets killed, it's with, like, with a straight razor, and the killer, like, shoves pages of Tenebrae, the novel, into her mouth. So the police are wondering if there's some kind of connection, if there's some, you know, if Peter Neal, the author, you know, knows somebody in Rome that maybe has a grudge against him or has some kind of, like, obsession or something like that. So they start kind of a relationship. And it should be noted, too, that it's not just the fact that, you know, pages from his book were, like, stuffed into the victim's mouth, but also the killer has made kind of like a little ransom note type of situation and put it under the door of his hotel room. And it has, like, a quote from one of his books, from Tenebrae, but, like, you know, in cut up letters. So obviously this is a killer who has a particular obsession with Peter Neal and his work. And so the cops, so he's kind of been, like, working with the cops to try to figure out, like, who this person is. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there's kind of a press conference, and where he's kind of taking questions from a bunch of different, you know, journalists. Now, one of these journalists is a young woman that he obviously knows, because, you know, they kind of talk to each other like friends and everything. Her name is Tilda, but she kind of comes at him a little bit sideways at this one. It's just kind of like, you know, why are your books so misogynist? Like, why do you hate women so much? And, you know, he gets kind of taken aback because he's like, you know, you've known me for 10 years. I'm not a misogynist. And, you know, but she's kind of like making the argument that all of your, you know, all of the women in your stories are all victims or they're all ciphers and various things of that nature. So his agent, who's played by John Saxon, by the way. So, yeah, John Saxon is in this, too. His character's name is Bulmer. And he basically says, well, okay, let's not have this fight right now. It's like we'll set up, you know, a one-on-one interview. It's also notable that another guy that is a journalist that seems really like probably like overly interested in Peter Neal's stuff is this dude named Cristiano Berti. Now, Cristiano Berti is kind of like they do like a TV interview later on, and he seems very conservative in the fact that he's like, well, all your books are about like sexual deviance, and he talks about, you know, this character is gay and stuff, and at which point Peter Neal's like, yeah, well, the character's gay, but that doesn't mean anything, like that doesn't have anything to do with like what happens in the story, he just happens to be, and that's everything like that. But this Cristiano is like, has this really kind of creepy, overwhelming interest in his work, and is talking about how all of his books are about some kind of like sexual aberrant behavior, and it almost kind of like the books are like punishing that kind of behavior. So like I said, that's another theme that kind of runs throughout this book. Now, as the movie goes on, as in many giallo films, you get like a lot of people getting killed. Tilda, the journalist who accused him of being a misogynist, she's actually a lesbian, and her lover, whose name is Marion, I think. I wanted to say it was Marta, but I think it's Marion. And Marion is bisexual. And so they have like this big argument, but then somebody breaks into their house and hacks both of them to death with a straight razor. And while they're getting killed, you can hear this voice kind of whispering about calling them like filthy, slimy perverts. So you're led to assume that the killer is like punishing people that he sees as sexual deviance, you know what I mean? I think the reason that he killed the first girl, like the shoplifter, was because she was basically offering sexual favors in exchange for getting off with shoplifting, so he saw her as, you know, like promiscuous or like a whore. So that seems to be the killer's motive, is that he's like going around killing people that he deems, you know, sexually deviant and need to be punished. So that's kind of what he seems to be doing. And like I said, you have the thing with the black gloves and all that kind of stuff. So it's a classic giallo in that sense. Another victim who actually is not portrayed as a sexual deviant, but is just kind of like was at the wrong place at the wrong time, was this young girl named Maria, who she is the daughter of the landlord or the owner of the building where Peter Neal is staying while he's, you know, doing his book tour in Rome or whatever. She actually accidentally stumbles across the house of the, I mean, she has a fight with her boyfriend and he dumps her off the back of the motorcycle, like in the middle of nowhere. And she ends up at this house that she's quickly able to determine is the murderer's house because of various like articles and various things in there. So the killer actually catches up with her and she gets killed also. So at this point, the cops are just kind of like, well, they're kind of asking Peter Neal, like, can you like rack your brain to figure out who this person might be? Because, you know, this person has kept, you know, sliding notes with quotes from Tenebrae, the book, under Peter Neal's door. So they're like, obviously this is somebody with an obsession with you. So Peter Neal thinks back and he goes, you know, that guy that I interviewed for, you know, was on the TV interview with, that Cristiano Berti guy, he seems like really super interested in my work. And I thought it was a little bit weird, like he came across as a little bit creepy. So the cops are like, yeah, maybe there's something to that. And, you know, Peter's like, I hate to accuse the guy or anything like that, but that's really the only person I can think of that's like super interested in my work and that kind of creeped me out in a little bit, even though I've only talked to him a couple of times. So the cops actually don't go there at first, but Peter Neal and his, he also has another assistant, like while he's in Rome, named Gianni, like a really younger guy. And they're like, well, we're going to go to his house and kind of like watch him and see what the deal is. Now, interestingly, this part of the movie reminded me a lot of, it's kind of a similar setup to like Bird with the Crystal Plumage type of thing, where somebody sees something happen through a window and didn't get a good enough view, or is kind of like haunted by a detail that they can't remember, and that's basically what ends up happening. Like, Gianni and Peter Neal get separated, and then while Gianni is watching Cristiano Berti in the house, like through this big glass window, he actually sees somebody come into Berti's house and split his head open with an axe. So he sees him die, but he doesn't really see the killer. He doesn't get a good look at his face or anything like that. And he's like, you know, obviously freaking out. So he runs across the yard, and then he finds Peter Neal, who has been knocked unconscious by a rock or something like that. Peter Neal's like, man, I don't know what happened. Somebody just like came and fucking knocked me over or whatever. And he's like, man, Cristiano Berti just got killed. Like, somebody got him in the face with an axe, and I didn't really see what had happened. Now, at this point, the cops are pretty sure that the women were killed by Cristiano Berti. And as that goes on too, like, Gianni, who is, as I said, haunted by this one detail that he couldn't quite remember, and he keeps replaying the murder like over and over again in his mind, he finally remembers that the thing that he was struggling to remember, that, you know, that one detail, was that whoever the killer was, like, Cristiano Berti was like facing the killer, and Cristiano Berti said, I killed them, I killed them all. So they find out later on that Cristiano Berti was indeed the dude that killed like all the women prior to this time, like with the straight razor. And that's indeed his motive, was that he thought they were all perverts and he was punishing them because he was like this crazy, you know. So everybody is kind of like, oh, well, he was the killer and now he's dead. But obviously somebody killed him with an axe and we're not really sure who that is. So mystery still out there, but they're kind of, everybody kind of feels better now that Berti is dead, because they're like, well, he for sure, you know, killed those other women, so we just have to figure out who killed him now. So apparently there is still a killer running around, though, because Bulmer, played by John Saxon, who up to now has been having, unbeknownst to Peter Neal, has been having an affair with his ex-fiancée Jane. Although it's not really an affair, and I don't know why they're worried about him finding out about it, because, I mean, from everything that's going on in the movie, I'm pretty sure that Jane and Peter had broken up, and she was the one that was kind of like obsessed with him, apparently, and was kind of, and like followed him to Rome. But then you find out later, I guess she followed him to Rome because she was having an affair with John Saxon or whatever. So I don't know. It was this whole thing. But they kind of seemed like they're worried about Peter Neal finding out about it, even though apparently Peter Neal and Jane have broken up. But whatever. So they're trying to be like all slick and on the DL and everything. And then so Bulmer is like, okay, well, we're going to meet for lunch at this particular piazza. And so he's there. So Bulmer's there waiting in the square, and it's like the middle of the day, and there's like people around and all this other kind of stuff. But then somebody basically walks up to him, and he's like, hey, whatever. And then like the person just like stabs him in the stomach and then runs off. Now, Jane was coming to meet Bulmer, but sees him dead laying there, and she like takes the fuck off. Now, I should note too, and I forgot to mention this, but this is kind of like significant. As I said, this is a pretty straightforward, narratively very, very straightforward film, particularly for a Dario Argento film. But there are a few weird flashbacks, and for a time, you don't actually know whose flashbacks these are. There's only like two or three of them, like kind of scattered through the thing, and they're always kind of, you always know when it's going to happen because like the music kind of changes, like it goes to this like weird like tinkly piano kind of music, and it kind of goes into this weird like a beachy kind of scene. And what you have is you have these three or four boys, and they're just like all in white pants and no shirts, and they're kind of like, they look like teenagers, I guess, and it's on this beach somewhere. And then there's this woman like in a white dress and these like red pumps, like shiny red pumps. And she's on a beach, and she's kind of, you know, enticing them, like putting her, you know, one sleeve of her dress down and like showing her boob and all this other stuff. And like all the guys are like, oh, okay, we're all gonna get in on this. And then another boy who's dressed the same, and you don't see any of their faces. It's kind of like just shot from like the chest down, so you can see the woman, but you can't see any of the boys' faces. So then this other boy comes and basically like smacks the woman upside the head, at which point the other boys and the woman chase this other boy down and like hold him down, and she starts like kicking him in the fucking crotch with her red shoes, and then putting her the heel of her red shoe like in his mouth. So it's almost kind of like an oral rape kind of thing. And like I said, this movie is probably you know, a lot of his movies have sex and nudity and stuff like that, but this probably has more, I think this really has more than any of his other ones. Not only is this his most violent one, as in the killings are more violent and there are more of them, but there's also a lot of eroticism in this one, which some of his other ones have that too, but I kind of feel like this is sort of like the peak of that. So as I said, this is obviously a flashback. This happened to somebody, but we're not sure who it is like until the end. So after Bulmer is killed, the cops are just kind of like, okay, well, now obviously there's still a killer running around, but it can't be Cristiano Berti, even though he for sure killed the first victims. So what the fuck? There's like two killers, right? And then, so Bulmer gets killed just in the middle of the day. And then Jane, Peter Neal's ex-wife or ex-fiance or whatever she is, ex-girlfriend, she's kind of freaking out because she just obviously saw her lover get killed. She goes back to her apartment, and in probably the most famous scene of the movie, she gets really fucked up. I mean, this is the scene that actually got censored the most in this one, because basically she's kind of sitting, she has a gun and she's like sitting at the table, like freaking out because she thinks somebody's going to come after her. And somebody busts in the window and with an axe and essentially like cuts her arm off, like at the forearm, just on the table, just like cuts it off where the gun is. And she just like gets up, and then her arm is just kind of like spraying blood just all over the fucking wall. And it's just, that's why maybe he wanted like everything on the sets to be white. Like all the walls are white. Her dress is white. You know, she has like really black hair and like really black sunglasses, but everything else is just white. So this just beautiful like arterial spray, bright red blood, just fucking spraying all over the place. And she's sitting there with fucking, and then like the guy comes in and like just keeps hacking at her and hacking at her. And she's just, there's just blood everywhere. I forgot to mention too that Gianni, the little Italian assistant, the young guy, the one who couldn't remember, you know, who just remembered that Berti had said that I killed them all. He actually, as soon as he remembered that, basically somebody in the backseat of the car like strangled him. So it's not just, now everybody's getting killed. Pretty much everybody gets killed in this fucking movie. Like after the killer is done like hacking at her, they, you know, his feet come into the shot, and then they pan up, and then you discover, spoiler alert, that Peter Neal is actually the killer. He wasn't the first killer, that was Cristiano Berti, but apparently what his end game was that because he got to Rome and this nutcase was killing people because of his books, he thought to himself, well, hey, there's a couple people that I'd like to rub out. So why don't I just like start killing people too? I'll just like take up the mantle. So as soon as you find out that Peter Neal was the one killing people, like after that point, like he actually killed Cristiano Berti, then he killed Gianni, then he killed Bulmer, and then he killed Jane. There were two different killers. The first killer was using the straight razor, and then the second one was using the axe. Peter Neal was using the axe. And then you discover too that the weird flashback sequences we've seen with like the boys on the beach and the, you know, the woman in the red shoes, those were actually his memories. And apparently what drove him to madness, again, this is very, very common in giallo movies, was some kind of like horrible memory from childhood that like, you know, made somebody insane. And that's why they, you know, started killing people later on. So apparently Peter Neal was the kid who got the woman kicking the shit out of his balls and putting the shoe in his mouth and stuff like that. And it's like this traumatic memory because of sexual humiliation, and he never got over it. Interestingly too, the woman in this sequence is actually played by a transgender woman, Eva Robbins, who's been in, I think this is probably her best known role, but she was in some other stuff as well. And that was done deliberately, although I don't know if she was the originally cast for that, but she was cast later on, which made it a kind of interesting dynamic because there's so much, and it was something, I think, like, you know, transgender, transsexualism, you know, transvesticism was something that he put, like, in a lot of his other giallo movies as well. So he's always been kind of interested in gender sort of stuff. And so I think that's kind of interesting that they actually did cast a transgender actress to do this actual part. It's not a huge part. There's no speaking lines or anything like that, but she's just like, you know, on the beach. And that's kind of like Peter Neal's memory of that happening. So as I said, that's another kind of, you know, kind of thing about the theme of this being like, you know, quote unquote sexual deviancy, or at least like how people perceive things being sexually deviant. So basically at the end, there's this big confrontation. Anne comes to the house, like the Daria Nicolodi's character, you know, Peter Neal's assistant. And then Peter Neal, thinking like a woman comes in the house and he thinks it's Anne, and kills her with the axe. But then it turns out to actually be like the female cop. So ends up killing her. And then Anne comes in and starts flipping out. And then the other cop comes in, and it looks like Peter Neal actually like kills himself. Like he has a straight razor, just like Cristiano Berti used, and he looks like he cuts his throat and he lays there, and they're like, oh, well, that's over. But they go out to the car to like call for backup or whatever. And then the cop goes back into the house and sees that the body's gone. And so it turned out that Peter Neal had actually faked his death. That was like a fake, you know, a fake razor. And so he sneaks up behind the cop and axes him to death also, at which point Anne is like sitting out there in the car going, what the fuck is taking him so long in there? And then like, so she comes in, and it turns out that there's like this sculpture, like this crazy modernist like silver sculpture that's like all these spikes and stuff, and it's sort of like fallen against the door, so that when she opens the door, because it's stuck, one of the spikes comes out and actually ends up killing Peter Neal, like kind of like impaling him to the wall, which I think was an interesting choice, because another theme of this movie is kind of death by art, I guess, or because one of the main tropes of the movie is that Peter Neal's novels being violent are causing someone to actually act out in violence. And Dario Argento kind of got accusations of that as well. And I think that's why he put like the whole scene in there about how about Peter Neal being accused of being like a misogynist and, you know, having women as victims all the time and just like hacking them up. And so he was kind of, this movie is almost kind of like a meta statement about violence in art and whether it can cause violence in reality. And I think it kind of, it's interesting too, because as it ends up, like the first killer, Cristiano Berti, who was apparently, I mean, he was nuts, obviously, but he was inspired by Peter Neal's novels to go out and start killing people that he thought were sexually deviant, so he was like punishing them. But then it ends up that the author himself, the one that was creating this fictional violence, actually crosses over into real violence as well. So it was almost, so that, like I said, there's this whole like duality type of thing where it's almost kind of like art causing, you know, art creating life and vice versa, like the line between art and reality. So I think that's like a really interesting, and I kind of pick up more of that like every single time I watch this movie, because it's like a fascinating, there's so much like going on in this movie. You could have like, you could write like a whole essays about this, which some people have actually. Oh, this is a great book if you guys haven't read it. It came out a long time ago. And it's kind of, if you know anything about Dario Argento or Italian, you know, cinema, Maitland McDonough, she's kind of a, she wrote a biography of him and, you know, stuff like that. So there's, this is kind of very in depth and goes into like all of his movies and sort of like talks about the you know, the themes of them and stuff like that. But this is like really, really good if you're into Dario Argento. So it came out, like I said, a long time ago. But anytime you see a documentary about Dario Argento, she's going to be on it, like talking about it. She's kind of like one of the experts about his movies and everything. But yeah, so this movie, I think more than any other ones, is kind of like Dario Argento. Not only, you know, did he have death threats against him by somebody that claimed that they had been driven insane, essentially, by one of his movies, Suspiria. So he put that into the movie as well. But he's also putting stuff in there that, you know, that critics had accused him of misogyny and things like that because of his movies, and wondering if, you know, the violence in his movies could manifest in reality. So he's kind of like making I'd say he's making a statement about it, but it's just kind of, he's exploring those themes in this movie, which I think is like actually quite cool. But yeah, so as I said, this came out in 82, easily, like I said, probably my second favorite giallo of his, Deep Red being the first, or Profondo Rosso, if you prefer. It seems so well put together. It's just very well plotted. It's not slow at all. It's not, you know, and the look of it is like really interesting. The music too, I guess, like for Inferno, he used Keith Emerson. Normally he would use Goblin, obviously, but in 82, I believe Goblin had broken up. So, and I think only the drummer had legal rights to use the name Goblin. So basically he just used like three of the guys from Goblin, including like Claudio Simonetti and some other, and the two other dudes. And so they're just credited by their last names because he couldn't use the name Goblin. But they did, and I actually quite like the music for this one. It's not my favorite again, but I have like a CD that has all of like Goblin stuff on it. And this is definitely one of the standouts. Again, Suspiria, their music for Suspiria is my favorite, but this is definitely good. Also, I can't not talk about this one shot because it's very famous, even though it doesn't really have much to do with the movie. But there is a very famous shot in this, which I believe is 2 or 3 minutes long, and it's a long crane shot that just basically comes out of one apartment window and like just tracks up the entire building like into another window, and then like finally at the end of this very, very long tracking shot is kind of the killer like busting open these blinds like to get into the apartment and kill somebody. It's interesting too because, you know, the score, the music is going through this whole thing, so it's almost kind of like this music and then you're just like crawling up the side of this building. And it's so weird. And then the music, which you think is on the soundtrack, there's one, but this is during the scene where Tilda, the lesbian journalist, and her lover get killed. So this goes on for like 2 or 3 minutes, and then Tilda suddenly goes, "Turn that off!" And then her girlfriend upstairs like takes the thing off the record and the music stops. So it's like, I don't know, this, like I said, it doesn't have a huge amount to do with the rest of the movie, but Dario insisted on doing this. They used like a, what I think it's called a Luma crane. I think that's how you pronounce it. And they had to get it from France. It had been used like in movies before, but I think this was the first time it had been used in an Italian movie. And he was just like really excited. And so everybody that talks about this movie that knows stuff about film have to bring up that really, really long like Luma crane tracking shot, just because it's so, I don't know, like I said, it's thematically, does it have anything to do with the movie other than maybe kind of giving this sense of oppression or of, you know, somebody being on the outside of, because it's not following the killer necessarily, because the killer's not like crawling all over the build, all the outside of the building, but it's just in there because why not? I mean, you know, I kind of feel like Dario Argento's whole filmmaking thing was like, it looks cool, so fuck it. It doesn't really matter. Even though this film, like I said, is pretty thematically solid, and he obviously put a great deal of thought into, you know, into the themes of this and kind of exploring the themes. Like I said, even the stuff about duality, about, you know, Peter Neal and the detective being kind of like two sides of the same coin. There's also that other great scene where the detective is like standing there, like looking down. It's like what at where Peter Neal's body was like a few minutes before. And then he kind of ducks down. And then Peter Neal is like standing up there before him. So they're almost like replacing each other. So this really does seem to be like one of the most well thought out, like, you know, and one of the most analytical films, I think, that he ever made. It has like some kind of dreamlike stuff in it, but it is very, very grounded in reality. And it doesn't have a lot of the kind of dreamlike, weird, you know, nonsensical kind of stuff, even though the killings are over the top, as most killings in these types of movies are, but they're not, you know, it's not weird like, you know, I fell into a room filled with barbed wire weird, you know what I mean, where it's just like it doesn't really make any logical sense. These pretty much, they're over the top and crazy, but they still make logical sense, so it's still like grounded in reality. But yeah, so if you've only seen you know, Suspiria or whatever, if you haven't seen, I mean, this is definitely when he was still, some people have said that this was his last great movie, you know, which I guess so, because kind of by the time I talked about Phenomena, aka Creepers, which I really actually kind of like that movie, but I think that did kind of signal, that was the one that he did after this one, a kind of a decline in quality. Although I will argue that Opera was a pretty great movie, and I think that came out in 87, if I'm remembering that correctly. So he still had some gas in the tank at this point, but I probably would agree that Tenebrae was like his last great movie. I mean, because Tenebrae is a great movie, and the ones after that were just like pretty good to mediocre to terrible. You know what I mean? I hate to say it, but yeah. So if you like giallo movies in general, this is pretty much, I mean, required viewing, you know, because it's easily one of the best ones and one of the best Dario Argento movies as well. And if you've only seen the American version, which is called Unsane, I don't even know if you can, if that's even available anymore, but you just like, don't even bother because it is so chopped up. Like I said, at least 10 minutes of footage are gone, including all the spectacular murders and a bunch of exposition as well. So it's like, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever because so much of it is missing. I'm pretty sure that everything you can get of it nowadays is, you know, the director's cut, the way it was supposed to be seen. So definitely check it out. Like I said, I have the DVD from Anchor Bay, which came out a long time ago, but it's pretty easy to get. I think that you can watch it on Amazon Prime if you have a subscription and probably some other streaming services as well. So if you've seen it and want to talk about it in the comments, then please do so. And I will see you guys on the next Flickers of Fear. Bye.